This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country out me. I got hot sauce in my bag, swag.
Just in case you haven't seen the video for Beyoncé's new song, Formation, here's a quick visual summary. It begins with a singer on top of a sinking New Orleans police car. There are images of unrest in Ferguson. There's graffiti that says, "Stop shooting us." And a young boy who dances in front of a line of police officers in riot gear with their hands up. All the while, Beyoncé, of course, singing and executing some perfect choreography along with a line of backup dancers. That video and the singer's performance of the song at the Super Bowl halftime show have revealed some pretty deep divisions that go deeper than just black and white. And we wanted to go beyond, beneath, and behind that conversation. So I invited a panel of four guests to sit down and discuss this. Arielle Marie started the Atlanta-based activist organization It's Bigger Than You. J. Michael Kinsey is a Cornell student and theater performer. Kate Forrestal is a freelance journalist from California, and Regina Bradley teaches at Armstrong State University in Savannah. I started by asking Regina if the Super Bowl is an appropriate platform for activism.
Yes, it is appropriate. I'm not, so let me give my disclaimers first. I'm not a Beyoncé stan, I'm not a member of the Beehive, but I do feel like it was appropriate because we've been fighting so long to actually have these types of conversations, and why not use one of the biggest platforms in pop culture and sports to do that? There were other messages on the Super Bowl, too. Let's make it clear. I mean, Coldplay came out for gay rights. It was a big rainbow before you got to Beyoncé getting in formation, which was, you know, somewhat appropriate considering that they were in San Francisco. but I really think it was appropriate considering that she was forcing an issue. She was using her platform to force an issue to make us to recognize the fact that we are having these conversations on the margins, but we need to bring them more to the forefront because black folks protesting and black folks saying they matter is important, but we're not going to get anything done unless we have two sides to the conversation. And I think that she used her platform to do it. It was very much calculated, which I said in both my Washington Post op-ed as well as in the blog that I wrote. And it was calculated. It wasn't just randomly, hey, I'm going to dress up as a Black Panther and in Northern California on the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party.
Let's take this to J. Michael, because there has been other, complaints about inappropriateness at other times. At the Olympics, when two athletes held their fists up quite some time ago, there have been complaints about this a number of times. Any time, even in Oscar acceptance speeches, when people talk about political unrest that's going on, is it appropriate to bring up political issues and social activism at events like the Super Bowl or even award shows?
It's absolutely important to do that in that space. I think for me, my problem is that the video was not depicted at the Super Bowl. What we did see was girls in booty shorts twerking, saying slay. And for me, I'm trying to understand where is the activism in that, especially in this heated racial climate that we are in right now in America. For me, I didn't get activism from Beyoncé's song. I didn't get really empowerment. And I was just really confused that everybody felt. I mean, I understand the Black Panthers are important. I understand that the commemoration of the 50 years of the Black Panthers is important. For me, it was not explicit. And in this time, I feel like we need explicit activism. And what Beyoncé was doing for me is not activism.
Okay. But let me bring that then to you, Kate Forrestal, because one of the things you argued in your piece was that Beyoncé's song and her performance isn't for someone like you. You are white. And maybe that's why, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe that's why some people felt it was inappropriate that she was doing a song that was targeting one specific demographic. Does that have any merit?
I could only hope. I completely agree with Dr. Bradley. I could only hope that it would be targeting much more than one demographic. I think that we're in a place where, particularly at the Super Bowl, I thought it was a perfectly appropriate place to do it. My first job out of college was working for an NFL team. And, you know, there are how many black men on the field? And I think it's perfectly appropriate that a black woman was the sort of crowning moment of that Super Bowl. I think it was very calculated, and I think making people uncomfortable is not a bad thing. I actually am friends with one of Dr. Bradley's friends, Dr. Zandria Robinson, is part of a project that I am doing, and I was at her house one night with her and her husband for dinner, and I just blurted out, I have to make myself uncomfortable, and then realized that that should be kind of the mantra of this project. If white people don't make themselves uncomfortable by stepping to the sidelines, by listening, nothing is going to get solved. I mean, so I'll get off my soapbox now, but I completely think it was absolutely appropriate what she did.
Celeste, can I speak to the previous comment about activism just real quick? I really feel like we can't use traditional models of activism because those traditional models are outdated. There's so many different ways to be an activist. If I like to twerk, if I like to have on a quote-unquote skimpy outfit, that shouldn't negate the fact that I'm doing something that is forcing an issue that otherwise would not be put into the forefront of the Super Bowl or at the forefront of even the Grammys, because it's not in a traditional form of activism dress. And I find that slightly problematic, and it takes away from the fact that there are multiple, just like there's multiple types of black folks, multiple types of black experiences, there's also multiple types of activism, and those activism forms might not please everybody. They might not work similarly in all spaces, but we have to, in order to progress the issue, we have to acknowledge and accept the fact that this activism thing is messy in the 21st century. And I think
it's always messy.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like especially messy now because you have social media. You know what I'm saying? And social media as like an additional fourth wall, if you will, that we didn't have during the 1950s and 1960s. And I think that because folks are actually being able to peek through that wall, it's making, we're getting people uncomfortable before we even can get to the issue at hand because of the way that it's packaged.
That's Regina Bradley. She's a professor at Armstrong State University. Also with us, Ariel Marie of the Atlanta-based organization It's Bigger Than You, Cornell University student J. Michael Kinsey, and freelance journalist Kate Forrestal. So I want to play you a clip from the Saturday Night Live skit that's been shared so much. Let's take a listen to it first. This was where they were spoofing the response to the formation video.
Day Beyonce turned black.
Guys, I don't understand this new song.
Hot sauce in my bag swag? What does that mean?
Maybe this song isn't for us.
But usually everything is!
It was the day white people lost their Beyonce.
So, Kate, I would never ask you to speak for all white people. but I am confused. I mean, Saturday Night Live is satiring a real thing. This really kind of almost visceral reaction some people had to the song and her performance. And I hope you can help me understand why.
You know, my best guess, based on kind of responses to the piece that I wrote, would be that she raised an issue and it empowered a lot of black people to have a conversation that perhaps they hadn't felt comfortable having. I mean, it became such a part of the zeitgeist. And I think what a lot of people want to do is assume that black people are completely comfortable in their presence, that everything is fine. And when someone with the power that Beyonce has says everything is not fine, that turns a light back on us, and we have to ask ourselves why.
I want to, for the African Americans that are with me, I want to play this comment from Killer Mike. He's a rapper from Atlanta, and he's speaking here about the formation video with HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. And it sounds like he's addressing not the white people that are upset. He's addressing the African Americans who are upset.
She's talking to other black people saying, look, stupid, because I'm not at Ferguson when you want me to be doesn't mean I've sold you out. And then the rest of the first verse is about her telling other black people, I like being black. This is the type of black I am. I like the fact my daughter's black. I like my old Michael Jackson nose. I like my child with an afro. I like me. White people, that conversation wasn't even for you.
Regina, what kind of conversation has gone among African-Americans, who some of whom are not happy? It sounds like J. Michael wasn't entirely happy with this. How does that conversation go?
Oh, child. I mean, I think it's important, though. I'm not here for just one-sided Beyoncé was awesome. I also feel like you need to shout out the issues that also came up in the video. I want to start there first. So with the video, you have Chantrell Patrice Lewis and you have Yaba Blay, who are talking about colorism and the issues with kind of like this one-sided idea of what Creolism means. And these conversations aren't including people who are part of that experience. And I really think that even now that I think about it, I really enjoy the fact that we're bringing up the fact that some of the people who are still in New Orleans, who are still dealing with the pushback against Katrina, were like, this is kind of a romantic notion of what happened after Katrina and needs to have these other aspects included. With that being said, one of the issues that I don't have, and this is what Arielle was talking about, and I really agree with her, is that we refuse to acknowledge kind of like this gendered understanding of how we're trying to encompass what Beyoncé is doing. And it's easy because it's always Beyoncé. She's a mega mogul, right? We kind of forget the fact that, you know, hey, she's also a black woman who happens to be from the South. Like, that was my entry point into the conversation. Was I'm like, thank God we finally have some conversations going on about what Southern black womanhood looks like. And also the responses were led by women who were from the South. I was like, praise the Lord. Hallelujah. Okay. but I also think it's equally important to include the fact that there were aspects of the song in the video that were not meant for everybody. And I think that that's what's driving people up the wall is normally when we listen to Beyoncé or see Beyoncé visuals, there's something that everybody can somewhat embrace or be comfortable with. And then with this song and the lyrics, it's neither one. And because there's not a Rosetta Stone for understanding the Southern black womanhood that she is presenting, it's making people uncomfortable because she's not using traditional practices of Beyoncé-dom, if you will. I mean, like, she created herself in a particular way. She's presented herself and sold herself in a particular way. And for her to step back from that, one, because she has, there's nothing else really, there's no other plateaus for her to climb. She's finally at a point where she can do this type of art and not have to be like, okay, I have to respond to every criticism, right, every critique. She can kind of just, you know, as Greg Tate said it really well, she can just put it out there and keep it moving and let everybody else have a panic attack about it.
If I can.
Go ahead, Ariel.
I think that there's a part of this conversation that is only for black women in the South, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm Atlanta till I die. I'm forever. I love Atlanta. My memories of Atlanta are Lowry hits MLK all day, right? Southwest Atlanta. And there are ways, I remember, I knew as soon as Kendrick Lamar went on stage and did this beautiful—
At the Grammys?
At the Grammys and did this beautiful performance, that it would immediately be compared to Beyoncé dropping this video. And I think that we should not be comparing the way that a black man talks about resistance to the way that black women talk about resistance, because the way that black women show up is so multifaceted. It has to be.
The real issue is that Beyoncé, has been positioned as this, you know, all-American black girl and what black folks should aspire to be. You know, we just want you to be pretty and to wear something skimpy and to dance real cute, you know. And I think it is wonderful that she showed that I'm more than that and I can do that. But we also keep going back to the song and to the video. And I'm like, well, what are we talking about? Because the song is doing something much different than the images in the video. And I'm just trying to understand, how are we to disconnect that?
That was Cornell University student J. Michael Kinsey. You also heard from Armstrong State University professor Regina Bradley, Ariel Marie of the Atlanta-based organization It's Bigger Than You, and freelance journalist Kate Forrestal.